This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for being here again. Welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast where traveler, experts and adventurer share their stories. If you want to learn about what it's like living in another country, you want to experience a new culture, or you just love to travel, this podcast is for you. Or maybe you need to get out of your comfort zone, and this podcast might be the inspiration you need. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi everyone, please welcome with me Adrienne Jensen from New Zealand. Adrienne is a creative writing teacher, tutor, editor and writer of fiction, non-fiction and poetry. She also has been a writer for the famous Te Papa Museum in Wellington for over 10 years. A big part of her work was also teaching English to non-native English speaker, and she worked closely with immigrants throughout her life. Hello, Adrienne. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
It's really an honor that I'm able to talk to you because your life is really interesting. You have worked so much with immigrants, which is a perfect topic for me here with the Expat Immigrant Travel Adventure podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm just feeling very grateful that you took the time and that you responded to me as well.
Oh, I'm very pleased to do that because I think it's great what you're doing. And I think these kinds of conversations that we have about migration and the experience of migrants from lots of different perspectives and what we're all doing, I think they're really important. Those kinds of conversations change our minds and change attitudes far more than policy, for instance. So
that's
I'm very pleased to be here.
Thank you. I mentioned a couple of things from your life already, which are probably the major ones and probably the well-known ones about you. But can you tell us a little bit about your life, how you grew up, and how also the topic immigrant kind of played a role in your early life?
Well, that's a very interesting question for me too, and it's one that I've thought about quite a lot. I grew up in Wellington with parents who were liberal and had wide interests and invited a lot of different people to our house. And so we had a stream of people coming through our house from different groups within New Zealand, but also from other countries. And I think I grew up thinking that that was the norm, although it wasn't the norm in New Zealand at that time.
Yeah,
I think that had quite a big effect on me. And in particular, there were people who came under what was called then the Colombo Plan, which is a government plan in New Zealand to bring people to New Zealand to study. And we had quite a lot of people come through our house who were here under the Colombo Plan. So I also knew that people came here to study as well as to live. And I think that combined with my parents' attitudes had a big effect on me. And then we went to Canada. I married and we went to Canada and lived there for a few years. And I had the opportunity to study multicultural education, which I hadn't done in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I found that very interesting. So it kind of consolidated something for me. And when we came back to New Zealand after a spate of, you know, doing the kinds of jobs we all do, working in factories and various things for those times in our lives when we're trying to find our feet, I ended up working at Christchurch Polytechnic and teaching ESOL to people who were then refugees, mainly from Chile, because that was the wave of refugees coming to New Zealand then, and then Vietnamese. And then Cambodia, and then we came to Wellington, to Porirua, north of Wellington, which is a very multicultural city. Right. And I became very involved with the project there. But I think all of that actually stemmed from my parents inviting a lot of different people to their house.
Yeah.
That's where it came from.
Would you say that your parents were more open-minded than other people in New Zealand, like welcoming to all sorts of people from all sorts of walks of life?
I think that's hard for me to answer because, you know, you think your own upbringing is the same as everybody's upbringing.
Yeah.
but, you know, they had lived out of New Zealand for quite a time, and I think maybe they were very sort of wide open and liberal for that time, or in some ways and not in other ways. You know, they were a mix, like we all are.
Yeah, true. And can you remember if you had any kind of already friends from other countries when you were younger and kind of kept in contact with some of the immigrant children as well?
I don't particularly remember that, although I went to an East Girls College, which was always a very multicultural school.
Right.
And so when I think back, there were lots of girls there from other countries. But I think the time when I actually really started to make good friendships with people who had come as migrants was when we came to Porirua, and I was involved with setting up what was then called the Porirua Language Project, which was a project for teaching English using volunteers to newcomers to New Zealand. And I was a newcomer to Porirua, and I had small children, and all these women came and they were all newcomers and they all had small children, and yeah, we kind of boxed along together.
Yeah.
We ran a lot of classes and we always had a creche, and my kids went to that creche, and I think for a while my kids didn't even know that there were other children who spoke English because they were always among non-English speaking children. So a lot of those people became my close friends.
Yeah, I can imagine that must have, yeah, felt like a little bit more like home since you kind of grew up with that environment already. And you seem really open. And would you think you have, well, it's hard to say how judgmental or how many prejudices there are about immigrants, but we all know there are still quite a lot of people who have certain, like, they are afraid or they can mainly see the differences and not the similarities. But for you,
I think all of us, I think everybody has prejudices.
Yeah.
And everybody falls into traps of racial stereotypes.
Yeah.
And we catch ourselves thinking certain things. I mean, I think, well, I guess I can't say everybody, but the vast majority of us, you know, have biases and little things that we catch ourselves out on.
Yeah.
So I think there's a whole lot of people like me who have lived quite a life among a mix of people, and absolutely that's changed me. You know, it's shaped me a lot.
Yeah.
But I think there are a lot of people like me.
Thanks for that. And as an author, and that's just one of your many talents, I guess, you also were the editor of the book More of Us, which I have even here.
Mm-hmm.
That's also how I found you and how I started contacting you. And this is a collection of poems written by immigrants. And is that kind of a result of the creative writing course you were participating and you were part of?
I think I might backtrack a bit and talk about a few other things that have led up to that book.
Oh, yes, please.
Because I've always sort of written, and I always think of it as sort of like running it as the footpath, running along the main part of my life.
Yeah.
But I've been very lucky that I've had a lot of opportunities. And a lot of that has been driven by the experiences I've had, cross-cultural experiences. And from a long time ago, I think I've been really interested in the way that people tell their own stories and that there's a place for the writer to enable the person with the story to tell it. And I think a lot of my writing has been like that. So and this is actually leading up to your question about more of us. I'm not going off on a complete...
I know. I'm actually quite grateful that you start from the beginning, because the whole story is what interests me too. So I'm just patiently waiting, because I know that other books also had something to do with other people's stories. So, yeah.
Right. So I'm backtracking. So... there was definitely a kind of pattern of the way things happened, that I did a book with a young Cambodian woman called Borony's Story, which was the story of her as a Cambodian refugee coming to New Zealand, which was widely used in schools and, in fact, still is. And that led on to an opportunity for me to do a book called I Have In My Arms Both Ways, which was the life stories of 10 immigrant women. And really the driver for me was living in Porirua, which is often seen as a economically poor area, although it's actually a very mixed area. For a long time, there's been a big stigma against Porirua. So I'm a staunch supporter of Porirua. I realised that in the areas where there are cheap housing, like Porirua, you get women, well, not just women, women and men, but I was particularly interested in women, who've led extraordinary lives in other countries. Yeah. And they come to a place like Porirua and there's cheap housing and they're kind of like a shadow of themselves. So I became very interested in how these women could tell their stories. And that was the driver for that book, I Have In My Arms Both Ways, which has actually been a really enduring book, maybe because the stories haven't changed a lot.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Yeah, so I've done other books like that. I did a book of interviews with migrant taxi drivers, and it was the same thing. You know, there are lots of taxi drivers. Well, it's changing. It's changed since we've done that book. Yeah. You know, Uber has become the big player in the marketplace, but there have always been a lot of taxi drivers or Uber drivers who are migrants, and a lot of them are very well educated and just haven't been able to get a job here. And so that was the driver for me to, I did that with someone else, to collect some of these stories of people who were now driving a taxi, but in a past life had been somebody else completely different. So there's been a kind of a train of connected events, I guess, and I do feel like I've been really lucky to have those opportunities. Yep. But in, I think in 2016, two other women who both actually came to New Zealand, Karina Gajegos and Milena Stojtavlevich, who has the most difficult name, and I set up this little landing press. And we wanted to publish poetry that many people could understand. Yeah. And over the first couple of books, we really defined our territory, which is what we wanted to give a voice to people who mostly don't have a voice in New Zealand. And so that book you held up was the third book we did, and it was poems by migrants and refugees. And I think that was the book where we said, right, this is what Landing Press is about. Because poetry is great for that. People think that poetry is very esoteric or obscure, or they hated it at school or something, but it's nothing like that. You know, poetry is great for telling a little story or giving a little insight, opening a little window, and because it's short, a lot of people can write poetry who think they can't.
Yeah.
So that book was poems by migrants and refugees. And the other thing about that book was that we asked for submissions in the way that publishers do when they're going to produce a collection. And then we realised that there were a whole lot of voices we didn't have, and they were people who didn't speak English all that well, people who just come here, high school students. And so we actually ran a lot of workshops with people so they could write specifically for that book. And that was the other major thing for Landing Press, that we realised we were going to create a lot of the work ourselves. So that was quite a long lead up to that particular book, wasn't it? But yeah. Shall we tell you about the launch of that book? Because that book, we had planned the launch to be on Race Relations Day in 2019. And Race Relations Day was actually a week after the Christchurch mosque shootings.
Right.
Okay. And so we found ourselves in the centre of a storm. Right? Well, the whole country was in the centre of a storm.
Yeah.
But we had planned this really big launch because we thought, you know, refugees and migrants don't get a lot of status. Yeah. So we're going to have a big status launch in the National Library in Wellington, and we'd ask some diplomats from the countries in the book. And we had a cabinet minister who was launching it. And then, of course, suddenly, could we even do this thing?
Yeah.
We were given permission to do it, and the National Library was completely locked down. We had armed police at the door because yeah. there were all these foreigners coming. And we had about 200 people come, and it was like this little book that we were launching was who we thought we were. Yeah. And maybe we weren't that, but maybe this is who we wanted to be. And we sold out that night and sold a lot of that book because it was just an extraordinary coincidence, a terrible and amazing coincidence.
Yeah, wow. And for everyone who doesn't know about the Christchurch mosque shooting, it's like definitely against immigrants. So the connection to it and just the importance of your little book as well and just importance of the whole topic is so immense. And the timing, of course, as you said, one could argue if it was a good timing or not, but it seemed to be a good timing because it was such a positive note on immigrants and how to see them and how to connect with them mm-hmm. as a country. And it's yes. also amazing how you really talk about giving immigrants a voice, because especially for me, I'm an immigrant myself, knowing that there is so much more behind leaving a country. And for me, talking to immigrants mainly on this podcast, interviewing them, I get to know a little bit more about the reasons why they left. And of course, there are a lot of young people who just left because of adventure, but there are also a lot of families, they didn't really have a choice or they didn't feel safe in their own country. And it's so amazing how you turn it around and you give people this voice and you are being curious and interested in those people's lives, because let's be honest, not everyone is interested in the neighbors, the immigrants around you, or people who come to your country. And to actually have this opportunity for them to be heard and you helping them get the voice out, that's so beautiful. And I just really love how you do it. And it's just the opposite of what I did, but it's so great to see the view from someone who worked with immigrants but is not quite an immigrant anymore, since you also lived in Canada. So mm-hmm. it's just very interesting. So thank mm-hmm. you so much for sharing that.
And when you said a lot of people aren't interested, that's absolutely true, because sometimes they have never been exposed to anything outside of yeah. their own experience. And sometimes, as you said earlier, there can be fear in that.
Yeah.
But the next, I'm just going to go back to Land Press for a minute. The next book that we did was a book of poems by cleaners
yeah.
And about cleaners. And we actually went and found cleaners. You know, we actually found cleaners and office blocks and rest homes and all kinds of places and wrote with them so that to give them that voice. And it's interesting that when we've done readings from that book, the poems that people are really interested in are those poems. And they're often quite, I mean, I could use the word naive, except they're not naive because they come out of a very particular experience, but they absolutely offer something that most people don't get. You know, like what it was like to be a cleaner during the lockdown, during the COVID pandemic lockdown. We always said things like, oh, we're so grateful for the essential workers and so on, but we never really knew what it was like for them. And so when people get the opportunity, they can be really interested. And then back to that's a great thing about a poem, that it's short. So, so it's not going to turn people off too much.
That's true. Yeah. As you mentioned before, for example, with a taxi driver or with other people in different jobs, they were highly educated people in their own country working in high positions sometimes even. And then they come to a country where it's not as easy for them to find a job. So they start working in jobs which are, in quotation marks, lower for some people. And it's so easy for other people to look down on them and to think you are uneducated or you are less or whatever. But actually, they do their best to survive in a country which is not their own. And sometimes they just never got a job in their field and they are really smart, but you can't tell without actually talking to them, getting to know them, asking them questions. If we actually are opening up ourselves to people who are, in other people's eyes, maybe less than, we will get to know them and we will realize, okay, some of them are actually even smarter than most people, had a really good career. So that's the part which I also find super interesting, that you specifically pick the people who have interesting jobs like driving taxis or are cleaner, where you never really know what's behind that surface as well.
But and then that, with even within that, there's such a range of, even within, say, being a cleaner, there's all of the range between the woman who comes from the Cook Islands and that's what she wants to do and that's what she does to basically get her children educated. And the person who comes as a from some other country and is highly educated and can't get a job here and then becomes a cleaner. But that thing of finding out who people really are, I'm just going to tell you an interesting little thing that happened, but this was quite a long time ago. I was teaching a night class for, it was for people who were fluent, quite fluent in English, and it was particularly for being able to talk about news and current affairs in New Zealand. Because a lot of people feel excluded from those kinds of conversations because they don't have the words or the background. So every year, every week, we would, this was quite a long time ago when most people watched the news on TV, we'd watch a news item on TV and then we'd talk about it. And as part of that, we went to Parliament and there was a whole group of men in that class who were Lao, who had all been in positions of real responsibility in the Lao government. One of them was a close friend of the king. And they're all really knowledgeable about a lot of politics, but never had the opportunity. And just by good fortune and some connections, one night we went to Parliament and we met the Minister of Foreign Affairs and we met in his office. And these men sat and they just talked with him as equals.
Wow.
And they were all working in factories around Porirua. And here they were talking about politics and talking about what should be happening in Southeast Asia with this man who was the Minister of Foreign Affairs. And they were all on equal terms. And I thought, you just have to give people the opportunity. You have to give them the opportunity to be the people, not to show who they are, but to be the people that they are.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
To do with, you know, I mean, we don't have to go to Parliament to do that. We can just one-to-one conversations and be really interested in what people do.
Yeah, and just being open to actually, meet them, really. So that's what I also loved about my jobs. I usually also communicate with the cleaner, with the people who take the rubbish, with just whoever is around me. And sometimes I have the most amazing conversations, and just seeing them as a person rather than as their occupation as well. It's like really, really cool. And your story is just really wow. I mean, you meet definitely a completely different set of people, especially with your job, with your skills, with your what you have achieved in your life. So you are really a person who can bring people together, and that's just really impressive as well.
Well, I do that in some ways, but not in other ways. And lots of people do that in different ways. Yeah. I mean, I think what I've been able to contribute is particularly through writing and also through teaching. And I actually do love meeting people. I love spending time with people.
Yeah.
But whereas I do that, you know, other people do incredibly practical things. You know, the last book, the last Landing Press book we did was on housing.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time with the Wellington City Mission, which is a really wonderful social agency that works a lot with homeless people and people in transitional housing. And so there's a whole other group of people there, and that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I guess if we each do our own bit in some way, maybe I like to think that it matters. I mean, sometimes you feel like there's a kind of overwhelming wave of not so good things coming at us.
Yeah,
But I guess I'm an optimist, and I do believe that we can all do some little thing, and we can all believe that we can make some small change. And I hope that doesn't sound trite and generous, but I actually do believe that.
Yeah, no, it sounds wonderful, and I believe that too. And I think we all have something really special to give in completely different ways. I hope to believe that I give somehow in my own way as well, and try to be of service and try to be kind. And there are a lot of people who are amazing. I mean, I meet so many people here as well. Of course, also a lot of immigrants, lots of people from different countries, but everyone from New Zealand was so welcoming and open. And of course, no one is perfect, but I never felt like they would make a difference, like in how they see me as a person. Even when it came to career, I felt in New Zealand it was easier for me to show my skills and then be put in a position based on what I was doing, based on what I was good at and what they could see that I can do, rather than like back home, it's harder when you, for example, don't have the qualification, you don't have the degree, then you won't necessarily get certain jobs. And that's what I really appreciated. And of course, it's not for everyone and everywhere here, but like little things make it easier for immigrants sometimes as well, just to be appreciated and to have someone who gives you that opportunity, as you mentioned before.
Well, that's really nice to hear, because I don't think all New Zealanders are particularly welcoming. I can be quite hard on New Zealand, actually. I think we're a really big mix of all sorts. Yeah. Well, I guess like every country. So I suppose one of the things that's always been interesting to me is to hear what people's experiences really like when they come here. Because, and you know this yourself, you know, when people change countries, I think there are gains and losses.
Yeah.
But for a start, the losses are huge and the gains aren't very great. Last week I was talking to a woman who's just come here from Fiji with her family.
Yeah.
And so she's left behind all her friends, she's left behind her job, she doesn't yet have a job, she doesn't have friends here. It's like the losses are a mountain on one side, you know, because she's come here because of her husband's job. And the gains must feel extremely small. And also she's come to Wellington and it's been incredibly windy in Wellington, so she probably thinks, even the weather's against me. and then slowly, you know, you make more gains and the losses become less. I don't know if that's how you see it, but I've felt that often. And so I suppose part of what we can do, now, am I going down this right road or not? I was going to say one of the things we can do is help make the losses less.
Yeah.
Because I think that's unavoidable, that situation of, you know, a lot of, and that's not true for everybody. I mean, there are people who come to New Zealand and love being here from the moment they arrive, and they, you know, make a lifelong friend when they get off the plane and all those things. But there are people like this woman from Fiji who's going to, I think, find it pretty hard going for the next year, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So I hope to meet some kind New Zealanders.
Yeah, and I will probably come back to that because just so many thoughts about it. So what I want to say about it is I feel what you said, because for me, I was a little bit of a mix of both. I came here, I already made a friend when I was in the airplane. And but I have to say, I needed that because I don't like being alone for long and I like having people around. And so I was seeing people and I was going and making an effort to getting to know them early on. But I was also mainly coming for adventure and then happened to stay. But you are right. In the beginning, it was all great for me because it was exciting. I met new people. I traveled around. But then I started my job. I met other people, and then step by step, all these people from the beginning, and they were also traveling, they went back to their own country, they went back home. And so most of the people I made friends with in the beginning, they just left. Mm-hmm. And so I had less people here in Hamilton. I missed my family, I missed my friends, and the longer I am here, the harder at the moment it gets, because everyone is moving around. A lot of people are from different countries. They might move back or move to a different city, or everyone has their own life. So it's actually, the longer I'm here, the more I'm thinking about my family and friends, though I made really good friends here as well. But I can only imagine for someone who comes because of a reason like the husband's work. They come, they probably didn't necessarily want to leave their home, but they kind of had to. There's not much to be excited about really in the beginning. So as you said, hopefully after a year and hopefully with some really nice New Zealanders, it feels a little bit less and the loss and the gain is balancing out at one point. But how was your experience? Have you noticed many New Zealanders dealing with immigrants in a negative way? Or how was that? Because you mentioned you were not really having the feeling that New Zealand is really welcoming.
Oh, I just think New Zealand, I probably didn't mean to say it quite like that. I don't think New Zealanders are universally welcoming.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a range. In fact, I was in a supermarket a while ago, and there was a couple there from probably from Syria or somewhere like that. And they were looking at the meat and they were talking together in Arabic. And a man came along and said, "Speak English."
Hmm.
Well, that's pretty in your face, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, I've had quite a lot of experiences of, particularly when I was involved with the language project, of people encountering quite overt racism. But and we know that. We know that that happens. We know that happens. And that it happens everywhere. So I don't want to dwell on that. I don't want to diss my own country. I think, where am I going to with this?
You think people can do better.
People can do better. We can all always do better. And, in fact, I think at the present, you know, and this is, you know, we see this in Europe and we absolutely see it in the States, you know, there's a rise of anti-migrant feeling and anti-migrant policies. And I think we have to absolutely be on our guard here to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real possibility that it can happen. partly because, you know, we have a lot more migrants here now than we had before, and so that shifts the balance.
Yeah.
I remember once my father, using a great example, he always worked for a long time in industrial relations, and he said, if you have, you know, if you have 100 people in a room and one person, say, comes in who is, whatever, Indian maybe, no one bothers. If you have 10 Indians come in, people just start to pay attention. If you have 50 Indians come in, then people might start to feel threatened.
Hmm.
And when you have 80, then they might say, well, what's happening here? You know, and so we're in the situation where we've got a lot more migrants. So visibly we've got a lot more migrants. And, I mean, I think we need migrants, and I think they've absolutely shaped New Zealand. They've made us what we are. But I think we do have to really be on our guard against, you know, this really creep of anti-migrant sentiment.
Yeah.
It's not only here, but in...
I have to say, I'm very, very sad as well how my current country, like my country, is looking like. And Germany, it's also not going in the right direction. It's really, really heartbreaking to hear the news, read some stuff, and see which parties are on the rise and getting more votes. It's really sad, especially with our history. We don't want history to repeat itself. And somehow humans are always going to make same mistakes. And I'm just praying that that doesn't happen as well, because the whole world is kind of, yeah, it has this trend, I would say, and it's dangerous. But as you said, hopefully we are all on our guard. I have seen beautiful protests in support for immigrants in my hometown, in big cities. So I'm really, really proud of all these people who walk for diversity and for all the people from other countries. So that's beautiful to see. And also, because I'm an immigrant, I'm living in a different country, it's easy for someone to say, oh, with you, it's a different story.
Mm.
No, you want me to be treated well in the country I'm currently in as well. So if you don't treat them right, how can you expect that other people treat me right here? So it's going always both ways, right? So what do you think can New Zealander do to actually make refugees or immigrants feel more welcome?
Ask them home. The other thing I come back to again, because this is what I'm interested in, is tell our personal stories. You see, if you come into a room and you have a hijab, or you have a gang patch, or you have a military uniform, you know, I might make all kinds of assumptions about you. But as soon as you sit down and talk to me and I sit down and talk to you, we can't hold those assumptions anymore, because suddenly people are real people. So that's why I'm always really interested in people telling their personal stories. But I think that one-to-one contact is just matters hugely. And, you know, I don't want to romanticize it or anything like that. And we're not going to get on with everybody, and we're going to have difficult neighbors and difficult all kinds. But I think that one-to-one, those personal relationships are really important.
Yeah,
I did another book quite a few years ago called The Crescent Moon, which the Asian Face of Islam in New Zealand. And it was really a book that the Asian New Zealand Foundation did, and it was a counter to the rise of stereotyping of Muslims that happened after 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of anti-Muslim feeling, and so they decided to do this book, which was like a series of snapshots and small stories of a very wide range of Asian Muslim people right across New Zealand. So I was the interviewer for them, and the photographer was a woman called Anne Swestra, who's a very famous New Zealand photographer.
Wow.
And we spent 6 months traveling across the country and interviewing people, and they were a really wide range of people. They were very conservative Muslims, and they were very liberal or nominal. You know, there were women who were married, there were women who were divorced, there were people who had lived here all their lives and considered themselves Kiwi Muslim.
Yeah.
And there were people who had arrived quite recently. And it was a wonderful project for me. It was a really wonderful project. It was like having the opportunity to sit down and have these conversations with all these people. And I made sure they were conversations too, because in some cases they didn't get a lot of opportunity to talk to New Zealanders about things.
Yeah.
And that whole project was about just showing this range of Muslims in everyday New Zealand life. And I think that kind of thing is really powerful too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really love that.
And yeah. Well, I was just incredibly lucky to do it, actually.
Yeah.
And an interesting thing about that kind of project when you're a writer is you always have this discussion about who should be doing it. You know, should it be a person from within the group or a person from outside of the group, so that you have that outsider role? And I was very aware of that. And Asia New Zealand weren't bothered, but I was. And so with every person that I met, I actually said to them, do you think I should be doing this job? It was kind of a bit hypocritical, because there I was doing the job.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing was that the overwhelming response was, we are absolutely delighted that someone is doing it.
Yeah.
And they also said, you know, in that one group, there are about 40 different ethnicities, many different languages. So any one person is going to be an outsider. But, you know, times have changed. I'm sure that I would not be the writer for that kind of project now. And, you know, I think we're always in transition and we're always moving on to new things.
Yeah.
So I totally appreciate that. But it was an amazing opportunity, and maybe the kind of opportunity that you would like everyone to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds so interesting. And actually, it reminds me a little bit on that time now, for example, where COVID hit, and all of a sudden all the Asians got blamed for it. And I even have a friend, she's from Brazil, but she is Japanese descendant. And she had encounters where she got insulted and blamed for the virus and stuff. And she's not even from an Asian country. She is actually Brazilian. So people just assume, have the stereotypes and just throw it out there. And it's that reminded me on this as well. It's probably could be a whole new project talking to different Asians and their experience of how they experienced COVID and how they got treated and what they actually feel like. Some of them might not be even, like a lot of people were born in New Zealand. So it's really interesting, yeah.
That would be a really interesting project. And maybe you could do that project. It would be. And I think when people do that kind of work, if it's publicized, then it becomes really illuminating to other people. Who don't realise that that's what's happening, that they're making chance remarks or being careless or being fearful. A lot of it, I think, comes from fear.
Yeah.
And so that can be really illuminating. So I definitely think you should do that project. and you better do it quickly, because otherwise they'll forget. You know, it's receding into the past already.
Wow. Honestly, I'm already like, I totally thought that would be a perfect project for you, but you're right. I also feel super interested in it. Maybe we should talk after this interview about it. I could definitely need like a pro in that regard.
Well, I'm not going to hold you to it. I'm not going to do that project. I've got other things on the go, and I won't hold you to it either. But would be, I think that kind of project's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm, yeah.
I just wanted to come back to your poems or to the poems of the immigrants, because that's also such a big topic in your life and your main way of giving them a voice. I'm still reading your book, and I've noticed for me the definition of poems, I usually feel like I always needed a rhyme to make it a poem. But of course, not every poem is a rhyme. And so for me, it was interesting to read them. And some of them are just like thoughts, and it's short and it's interesting. And I was wondering, was there any particular poem which was either sticking out, or you really kept it in mind, it really was standing out, or it touched you in a particular way, or something which was so powerful or present, or just something you were keep thinking about it and was staying in your mind, and why?
From that book, do you mean?
Even not from that book, like poem in general. If it's one from the book, then sure. And if you say there was no particular which was like so outstanding that I remember it for the rest of my life. But if there was, then that would be very interesting.
Well, there's a very tiny poem that isn't in that book that I can't remember now where I read it.
Yeah.
Which goes, and it was written by a person who came, who went, and I'm not even sure if they were in New Zealand or not, but came to a country, and it goes, I walked and walked and walked and saw no face I knew. I walked and walked and walked and no one knew my face.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a poem about such loneliness. I've always remembered it. But with that comment of yours about that a poem needs to rhyme, well, you know, there are a lot of poems that rhyme, and there are a lot of poems now that don't rhyme.
Yeah.
But I think there is a difference between prose and poetry. You know, I think poetry has a rhythm to it, or has some kind of music about it, and it's also quite concise. You know, it uses language a bit differently. But because we are really encouraging people who have not written anything, let alone poems, to write, then what comes up is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Because what I've often done with people, well, sometimes we just let them tell us it's a little story. You know, it's a little story, because that's what fits their voice best. But often what I will do with someone is I'll suppose they're a cleaner. I'll just use that for a moment.
Yeah.
Then we just sit down and they just talk to me, and I just write down verbatim, word by word, exactly what they say as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
And they just talk and I write. And then after that, we talk about what a poem is, and those things, you know, that has some rhythm to it. And a lot of people can hear that.
Yeah.
You know, people who are attuned to language can hear that sort of rhythm or music. And we talk about how it doesn't have more words than it needs. And that often comes from the way that you break things up into lines.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge amount on how you break things up into lines. So then we take their words and we play around with them.
Yeah.
We never change the words. We never, you know, substitute any. We keep their words, but play around with them, and they can see that what emerges is something that's much more in a poem form, that is exactly their voice. And I think that's one of the ways we've been able to get poems from people who've never written before.
Yeah.
And they're really proud of it, because it is their poem. You know, I've nudged them along and said, well, look, you might want to do this or do this, but they've written it, and then they come to see it in a book. And in a nice book, not just some little, photocopy, little stapled thing, but in a really nice professionally produced book. And it's huge. Yeah. It's huge for them.
That's very cool. Yeah, definitely. And also, I'm pretty sure.
But it doesn't, that means a lot of them don't fit. There are always some rhyming poems in the books that we do, because we think, there's a generation of people who love rhyming poems, and there's a generation of people who write rhyming poems.
Yeah.
And all sorts of people who still do, but the majority don't. And I actually think it's really hard to write a good rhyming poem. It's harder to write a good rhyming poem than a good not rhyming poem.
Yeah. I have to say, I used to love writing poems, and I loved the rhyme, and I started then writing it into more song type of things. And I don't know, I also wrote poems for my family as a gift, and I would read it out loud on like family celebrations. Some were quite nice, some were a little bit sarcastic, or like some more like in a yeah, so that was my way of expression as well, and I really enjoyed it. So that's why I was also interested in it, and I was quite grateful for my friend who gave me the book. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just comes together so nicely.
Well, in the newest book that we're just working on now, which is about generations, we actually have little poems from 4-year-olds. Cute. We have poems from, you know, 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
We have poems from 80-year-olds. We have poems right across the board. But some of the cutest poems are from the 4-year-olds.
I bet. And I'm sure everyone is very grateful that they have the space and the place to do those things with you. Like the fact that you were offering those courses and those workshops, that's just really amazing. So I'm pretty sure they are all very grateful that they had the opportunity to do that.
I think people are, actually. I think when you give people the opportunity to write, they often are very grateful because they can do something that they haven't done before. For this workshop, we've run 11 workshops around the country because we're trying something a bit different, with all kinds of groups of people and you using different people to run them. But I ran a workshop for Arabic speaking women and a workshop where these little poems from kids came on Grandparents' Day for grandparents and their grandchildren. And we also ran a workshop for climate change activists.
Right.
And in all of those workshops, there were people who had written before, absolutely people who had written before who could write well, and people who hadn't written anything.
Yeah.
But it's like you give them the opportunity and you give them the freedom to do it and some confidence to do it, and they grab it with both hands.
Yeah.
Because it's short, they can do it then and there, and then you say, don't go away with those poems, give them to me. And you make sure that they don't disappear.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like photos on a camera that just disappear.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing. Like, as you said, having a collection of all of it in a really nice book is just, it's out there and you can't get rid of it anymore. It's just there, and that's really nice.
Yeah, and in this digital age, people still really like to have a book.
Oh, yeah.
Physical book. It really matters a lot. It matters a lot more than being able to read it as an e-book or, you know, whatever else. There's something about the physical book.
Me too. I love having it in my hands and going from page to page and having the smell of the book. The smell. Yeah. I don't know. I like it. And I have to say I'm one of those, but that's probably not necessarily a good thing. I also love to own it. I love buying it and not just go to a library and borrow it or read it there. I love having it at home and being able to read it again if I want. And yeah, that's really nice. So before I ask you the last question, is there anything else you would love to share with us today?
I don't think so. I'm just having a wee look at some questions here. I mean, there's lots of things to talk about, and for me, probably some of the most interesting things are personal experiences with people. I mean, I could talk for hours about, you know, experiences with people, but I'm not going to because that must be to rabbit on and on. So I think you should just ask your last question.
Okay. So first of all, I'm very, very grateful for your time. You're very generous. So last question would be, if there would be a law you could bring up, you could say, okay, this is the law I want to be implemented. in regards to immigrants, however that might look like, what would it be? What would you try to implement as a law?
Oh my goodness. Could you think of an easier question?
Sorry, I know it's a hard one.
It's very timely given that we have a new government who is making very major changes that people have different views on.
Oh yeah.
What law would there be? I might think of something completely different tomorrow, but the first thing that came to my head is that it's so important for people to learn English, to have the opportunity to learn English.
Yeah.
And not just for 6 weeks or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
That I think, but I don't know if that's something you can legislate for, but I think for people to have the opportunity to learn English for a long period of time for free, would be really important. Something else that I think you can't legislate for, so I'm kind of avoiding the question, is so many times I've thought that what people really need when they came here, a lot of people, is they need kind of like a mentor. They need someone who will stick with them.
Yeah.
Not just for 6 weeks again, but for a period of time, like this woman from Fiji, who really needs someone who will work with her to help her get a job, to find her feet here, and stick with her over a period of time. And there are absolutely people who do that, but it's quite random, I think, where that happens. But then I don't think you can legislate for that either, but you can legislate for migrants coming and having proper working conditions. And at present there's a lot of publicity about migrants who are coming living in very poor conditions, being absolutely ripped off by employers, and I think all of that could be prevented, and I think it could be legislated for. And maybe there is legislation already, but it's just being ignored. But I think we could do so much better in that area. So I've given you some choices.
I actually love every one of them, but also it was more like you could even have said, I want the government to give every immigrant whatever 50 days of food. Like, it doesn't have to be, it was more like even if it is completely out of reality. So it was more coming from heart, and you were pretty much close to reality anyways. So if it is like able to be implemented or not, just the thoughts you had about it were really, coming from your heart and are very realistic ones as well. So who knows what the future might hold for us.
Who knows?
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.